Welcome to the Legal Nurse Podcast, where you'll get tips to expand your legal nurse consulting skills. Every week, you'll hear from experts from within and outside the legal nurse consulting business. They'll share their knowledge to help you grow. Your show is moderated by Pat Iyer, a legal nurse consultant with over 30 years' experience. So join our community, sit back, relax, and get ready to learn. Here's your host, Pat Iyer.
This is Legal Nurse Podcast, and Pat Iyer with Greg Williams. We're going to be talking about a subject that is very much in the news and in politics today, which is negotiating with a bully. Greg is a Harvard-trained negotiator. He's a TV news commentator. He assists organizations who are facing tricky negotiations, helping them with their bottom line. And he teaches negotiators the fine points regarding body language to obtain the maximum benefits for you involved in interpreting nonverbal body language signals during a negotiation. Greg and I have worked together for approximately 10 years. We're part of a mastermind group that I started for National Speakers Association, and I have learned a great deal from Greg in terms of negotiations. Greg, welcome to the show.
Why, thank you, Pat, and also thank you for that introduction. And just to add a little more to that introduction, for all of you that more than likely already know this, Pat is a fantastic person to work with. She helps me shine.
Well, thank you, Greg. And we work together with a collaboration of putting out this book, which came out in 2018, Negotiating with a Bully, which is Greg's latest book. He has written several books prior to that time. First of all, Greg, I wanted to focus on the bully aspect of our topic. How do you know that you are dealing with a bully?
Pat, that's an excellent question, because different people will assume different personas based on how they perceive they're being treated by someone. And thus, the way you know when you're being bullied is how you feel about whatever actions that person is projecting towards you. Now, the other aspect of all of that is the fact that, in my case, my moniker is the Master Negotiator Body Language Expert. As a result of that moniker, in speaking environments when I'm presenting, some individuals will want to challenge me because they see me as an authority figure in that particular environment. Now, are they trying to bully me at that particular point in time? Question mark. And thus, if I perceive them as bullying me, I may adopt one set of actions as opposed to not if I perceive them as being non-threatening. So everyone has to assess to what degree they're feeling or sensing something that they are perceiving from someone's actions and determine if that particular action is intended to bully them.
Suppose you're in a room with a bully. Are there nonverbal body language signals that should set off that warning bell that you are indeed facing a bully?
Well, you know, you're going to hear the answer to such questions by me saying it depends a lot throughout this whole interview. And the reason it depends is because, again, it goes back to what you're perceiving. If someone is staring at you, are they doing so because they find something intriguing about you? Or are they doing so because they're trying to intimidate you? Again, you have to perceive what the actions are, and to the degree that you're not sure, you truly might walk up to that individual and question them. Now, there are certain gestures that you might observe. For example, someone is staring at you with a smile on their face. Is the smile genuine? A genuine smile is usually also denoted by what's known as crow's feet around the eyes. So this is one thing that could be interpreted as a smile, as opposed to this, which is broader, wider eyes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Those are little signs that you can observe. But even more so, let's take this to the opposite end of the actions that you might perceive. Someone's looking at you like this, and let's say they're across the room, but they're literally leaning in and they're looking at you like this. That's a completely, completely different set of gestures that person is displaying towards you. And you can probably tell, Pat, that even feels more hostile. First of all, they're literally leaning in. Why are they leaning in if they're standing all the way across the room? You have to consider that thought. And why are they staring at you so intently? Are they trying to recall what it is that they may have or know about you, have prior knowledge of you, and to what degree are they actually assessing it, if that's what they are doing? What other gestures might they be conveying? Are they doing something like this as they're looking at you? Well, now that's more of a threatening gesture also. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Bumping the fist. So that's more of a synchronization of body language, nonverbal signals to indicate that person is sending, that person is truly sending you a message, I'm going to get you, as opposed to even just rubbing the hands together, which may be conveyed as, well, there's something intriguing about you, and I am anticipating discovering more of what I'm sensing. So again, it depends on the situation. It depends on the circumstances. It depends on what the target, let's say you in this particular case, is doing in the environment, and what that individual that's conveying those signals is actually doing, why that person's in the environment, et cetera, et cetera. There are a lot of subliminal thoughts that are also going on in that environment per both individuals, the target and the individual that's actually sending those signals. And again, it goes back to prior relationships. So you have to consider all of those nuances into detecting and assessing to what degree someone's body language is truly threatening or non-threatening.
And it sounds to me like it's looking at the context, looking at perhaps clusters of signals. For example, just clenching hands into a fist could be a way of expressing anger. It could be a way of controlling anxiety. It could be soothing yourself because you're literally trying to hold on to self-control. So it sounds to me like looking at what a person is saying and that person's body language together and the messages that that person is sending to you all have to be considered rather parts in isolation.
Exactly. And that's the other thing. To the degree that anyone that is perceiving someone's body language signal ahead of time can actually look at a foundation, set a foundation of how someone utilizes his or her body language in a normal environment. You set that as the baseline. When that person is in a non-threatening, normal environment, that individual will exhibit certain body language signals. And once you have that base established, you can note to what degree the body language signals in a different environment differ from those that you had previously seen. Now, let me go back to one other thing, too, about the fists and comfort gestures. The body always seeks to maintain a sense of safety, security, and therefore, when it is out of that sense of secure environment, the body will commit certain actions to try and move itself back into that environment that's safe, calm, etc. And thus, when it comes to some soothing gestures, you may see this with the hands rubbing together as a soothing gesture, but you'll also note that people will touch themselves somewhere or another. And those are more soothing gestures than the fist rubbing or something like that, because that is not as much as of a comfort gesture. If you actually did that, you can feel a slight tinge of discomfort, as a matter of fact. So again, one has to be very much aware of what one is doing. Are they really trying to soothe themselves, or are they sending a message to me to indicate that something is to follow afterwards, and what it might be is what that body language is actually conveying.
To switch our focus a little bit, when you and I first started working on negotiating with a bully, the topic of sexual harassment, sexual intimidation, sexual coercion came into the news with a prominent TV producer who was exposed for his behavior. And that began a cascade of women reporting incidents, collectively developed the name of Me Too, as in it happened to me too. Since that time, the men who are being exposed for their behavior has not stopped. It's continued. It's almost on a weekly basis that you hear about somebody who's prominent, whose behavior has led to accusations. Can you help me put in context, how does the Me Too movement and bullying relate to each other?
It goes back almost to the first question that you and I engaged in, per how it is that someone knows that they're being bullied. Me Too is now reframing what it means to be bullied. You may recall a certain individual in the United States making a vulgar comment about grabbing a woman's body parts, and then just chalked it up to, that's nothing more than locker room talk. Okay, locker room talk back in the day, call it if you wish, was supposedly okay for guys to engage in. That was then. Me Too has reframed what men should do, especially when it comes to respecting women. As such, what was acceptable back then is now not acceptable, and thus one has to understand the environment that one is in to understand what bullying really means. Had Me Too not come about, how do I phrase this? Had it not come about, there would have still been shifts in the perspective of what was right or normal. And remember I said about establishing a foundation of how someone utilizes his or her body in a non-threatening environment? Me Too has now upped the ante for what a threatening environment is. And a lot of men, rightfully so, from my perspective, have been called out on their demeaning acts that they have projected towards women for way too many years. So, again, the Me Too movement is something that was just waiting to occur, that had already started happening because of the actions that men engaged in years gone by with women, and it was just waiting to cascade into what it presents itself as now. The point is, Pat, in order to be in any environment from a bully perspective, know what the environment is that you're in, number one. Know what the norms are, number two. And if you sense, as the result of someone's reaction to you, that you have offended them, question it immediately. We all have these sensations from time to time, we call it intuition, as to how someone is perceiving our actions. And thus, if you perceive that someone's not receiving your actions correctly, ask them about it so you can correct the situation.
Well, we know that men have been exposed recently for bullying women, sometimes years ago. What other parts of our population are vulnerable to being bullied, aside from the male-female perspective that we've just been talking about?
It can occur in any aspect from any type, nature of individual, period and point blank. Again, just because you and I are interacting and both of us consider our interaction to be normal, it is. If by chance I were to say something to you, be you 5, 10, 30, 40, 60, 80, 90 years old, and you thought it was out of the norm, if you were to say something, you would then be informing me that I'm bullying you. And again, it goes back to the perception. And thus, no matter male, female, grown, not grown, etc., people have to just be aware of how they are being perceived by someone else, because there is a true cost to bullying. And I know we're going to discuss that in a moment, but you don't even want to go into that perspective of where you're being perceived as a bully. And thus, to prevent it, be aware of how you're being perceived.
Yeah, I'd like to focus on the cost and bring up an example of something that has happened to somebody who's very close to me. She is in a top executive position in a large corporation. Her immediate supervisor has been bullying her. She ended up going to the emergency room with chest pains and rapid heart rate. And her family doctor told her she needed to take a leave of absence from her job because of her stress reactions. And this bullying relationship has been going on for months. She's now currently on a leave of absence and trying to recuperate physically from the experience that she's been struggling with. Can you comment on some of the costs? I've just given you a health-related cost, but what are some of the other costs associated with being bullied from the victim's perspective?
Well, once again, it depends on the environment that we're speaking in, because the home environment is one perspective, a work environment is another perspective, a school environment is a different perspective, and in all of those environments, as an example, the bully, or I should say the victim, could become somewhat withdrawn. And by being withdrawn, that individual may not make the degree of contributions that he or she would have otherwise been able to make and add value to that particular environment. In addition, when it comes to being victimized in a workplace environment, there's the cost of lost productivity that has to be considered. That cost and lost productivity truly influences the bottom line. In the home environment, if someone feels bullied and victimized as such, that person starts to withdraw, and the love that was initially there that drew two people together then starts to fade. And the point of that is, over a period of time, it will fade into where two people may be in the same environment physically, but mentally, they may be miles apart. So one has to understand what their actions are doing to someone that they project all kinds of bullying attention towards, per how that's going to influence the relationship as the relationship progresses.
Let me stop this program to ask you a question. Is this you? You became a legal nurse consultant because you enjoy helping people. You became a legal nurse consultant because you enjoy solving problems and working with attorneys. Then you pick up the phone to hear one of your clients screaming about an invoice. The number of hours you billed exceeded his expectations. How do you handle him? You think, I don't deserve to be bullied. I need to be treated with respect. What am I going to do about this toxic client? You realize you stand to lose a lot of money if you give in to this attorney. Your desire to please the attorney has flown out the window, and you just want him to stop yelling at you. If you give in every time an attorney questions you, you'll quickly lose control of the conversation. I used to feel the same way until I learned how to identify toxic clients in my legal nurse consulting business. I developed a system for responding to them that I will share in my masterclass, How to Deal with Toxic Clients. When I created the system that I will share with you, my frustration level decreased and my sense of control increased. What would you like to know? What would you like to know about what to do? You're at the point of a decision. You will get a client who you wished you had never agreed to help. If you want to have something different happen when you next encounter an angry client, attend my masterclass on dealing with toxic clients. I will show you how to deal with the troublemakers and how to build strong relationships with your clients. Join me for this training, How to Deal with Toxic Clients. It is a masterclass taught online. There's no charge for this training. It's my gift to you. Get the link to this free training by going to our show notes for Legal Nurse Podcast 268 and 269. At podcast.legalnursebusiness.com and click on the button to get access to the training. Let me give you another scenario an expert witness who was bullied. In the second situation, I describe the expert witness who's bullied during a deposition. In my experience, having reviewed hundreds of cases as an expert, attorneys behave worse at a deposition than they do under the watchful eye of a judge and jury. Expert witness work is challenging. It requires you to be extremely detail-oriented, analytical, and clear. Experts enter a deposition with a heightened sense of anxiety. They know that everything they say and do is under observation. Their words need to be thought out, well organized, and given in light of the issues of the case. A slip of the tongue can affect the case. A bullying opposing counsel makes what is already a stressful situation into a nightmare. In one of my depositions, the attorney started off asking details of how many cases I had reviewed each year for plaintiffs, for defendants, how many depositions I went through each year for plaintiff, for defendants, and how many trials I had each year for plaintiffs and defendants. He wanted those details for 5 years. I don't know about you. I can't keep this kind of data in my head. When I told him I didn't remember all of this, he sneered at me and in an insulting way asked me if I had some kind of medical condition causing memory issues. He continued to belittle me to the point that I wanted to kick the client sitting next to me to signal he should intervene and stop the behavior. At the next break, I poured out my frustration, but my client did not become more proactive in controlling his adversary. The deposition lasted from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. Ultimately, the case was so strong for the plaintiff, I was the plaintiff expert, that the case settled. Being bullied at a deposition is horrible. The attorney who hired the expert witness should step in to protect the expert. Meanwhile, the expert needs to calmly answer the questions and not react to the nonverbal body language and nasty tones in the attorney's voice. It's dangerous to lose composure during a deposition because the expert can blurt out harmful answers. The only way to get through this kind of experience is to endure it, knowing it cannot go on forever. And let's look at in-house bullies. If you're not familiar with the term in-house, consider it as applying to any legal nurse consultant who is an employee working as in a law firm, a regulatory agency, or a healthcare facility. Unlike the independently employed LNC who can refuse to work with a new client, the in-house LNC is caught in the environment. It's not easy to refuse to work with a bully. That person could be your boss. Healthcare facilities have become aware of the huge economic, social, and workplace costs associated with bullying. Morale, retention, and productivity plummet. Patients end up getting hurt when communication breaks down. The awareness of the costs resulted in a directive to have a zero-tolerance culture around bullying. But even though employers are aware of the destructive aspects of bullying, it continues to be a disruptive behavior. 65% of people who feel bullied will leave their jobs. If you're feeling bullied and you are an employee, confront the behavior. Discuss how it makes you feel and request a change in behavior. This is easy advice to give. It's hard advice to follow, I know. There is risk associated with confrontations, but if you don't speak up, the behavior will continue, and then you will be faced with a decision about staying in or leaving your job. When someone is bullying you, you must let them know that you're not going to take it. If you don't, the cost of not doing so will just increase until you do eventually address it. Just be mindful of what is going on in any environment and to what degree you need to regain control of the situation. Remember the free training I told you about in the middle of this show, How to Deal with Toxic Clients, is waiting for you. Go to the show notes for this podcast, Legal Nurse Podcast 268 or 269 at podcast.legalnursebusiness.com and click on the button for the link to the training page. There was a man that I met earlier this month who told me that his son was being bullied in school to the point that they had to take him out of that school and put him in a different school so he could get a fresh start. Have you heard of situations like that occurring?
Oh, definitely so, Pat. And again, as a victim, now I'm not blaming the victim with this statement, but people will only do to you what you allow them to. What that means is, if you are in an environment that is not nurturing you to the degree that you need to be nurtured, get out of the environment. I don't care what environment it is. And thus, even in a school environment, it's good that parents would take their kids out of an environment, especially one that they are being bullied in, because that bullying is stunting the growth of that kid from a physical, emotional, and psychological perspective. Why should they leave their kid in that environment and allow their kid to be subjected to such nonsense? So one has to understand the true cost, and the true cost can be borne out over an extended period of years. Unfortunately, some bullies have actually gone back in and committed heinous acts whereby they get even, as it were, for being bullied. That's a cost that we've seen occur too many times in the United States. And I'll leave it at that because I'm sure everyone knows exactly what I'm speaking of.
Yes, those are good points. And also keeping in mind that we have listeners in over 50 countries, let me draw out further that what Greg is referring to, if I'm correct, is mass shootings in schools, in places of religious organizations, and other settings where the anger is unleashed in the most violent way. Let's talk about the costs to the bully, because so far we've talked about the shame or embarrassment or financial costs or loss of productivity that are associated with being bullied. Is the bully getting away with this behavior without paying any costs himself or herself?
It depends. I'm going back to it depends.
Yeah, I've heard it depends before.
Yes, exactly. And the reason I say it depends is because some bullies truly don't consider themselves to be a bully. They consider themselves to be overly aggressive sometimes, or just mildly aggressive. They don't consider themselves to be a bully, and thus they don't think they are incurring a cost for their actions. In reality, if others sense that they are being bullied by this individual, others will start to shun this individual, which means opportunities may be lost that the bully never realized or even available. Why? Because a silent door closed as a result of the way that person interacted with others that made others move away from that individual. Okay, I have three opportunities. Who should I ask to engage in these opportunities? Well, there's person A, person B, Person C has a tendency to be a little rough around the edges when he's interacting with other individuals, constantly cutting individuals off when they're speaking, constantly getting in someone's face to the degree that they feel uncomfortable, constantly trying to tell people what they should do. And Pat, as you and I both know, no one likes to be told what they should, or no one likes to be should on, as it were, and that's S-H-O-U-L-D, just for clarification purposes. And I say that again to say, bullies have to recognize if they want to continue to progress in life, what their actions are costing them, because their actions are costing them future opportunities. And to the degree that the bully recognizes where it is that he wants to be and who it is that he'll need to help him obtain the goals that he seeks for the future, he has to also learn to curtail his actions such that others are more accepting of him.
I'd like to bring the context into the legal nurse consulting world. There are really two major realms in which legal nurse consultants encounter bullies. First, if they work on medical malpractice cases, the outcome that the attorney is involved in litigating might have been due to bullying behavior from one healthcare provider to another. That's a typical scenario, rare, but is associated with a healthcare environment because of the balance of power and the way that power is expressed within the healthcare system. The other type of bullying that legal nurse consultants encounter, especially if they've gotten a group of attorneys who work with them, inevitably they are going to encounter the attorney who is unhappy with the size of an invoice or the quality of the work product and perceives himself, and it's usually a male in my experience, as being a good negotiator by going after that legal nurse consultant or expert witness and saying, you've got to cut down this invoice. This is outrageous. Too many hours. I refuse to pay this. That's the other persona. And both the bullying physician, for example, in healthcare scenario, and the bullying attorney are pieces that legal nurse consultants encounter. The bullying physician is easier to manage because the nurse is looking at the behavior after the fact. It's what led to the lawsuit. So there's no one-on-one eyeball-to-eyeball confrontation in that realm. But the bullying attorney is a huge problem, although uncommon, but a huge problem when nurses encounter that type of scenario. So I wondered what your comments were about both of those situations.
Well, once again, it depends. And again, I say it depends because in some circumstances, let's say with a lawyer as an example, if you know this lawyer's modus operandi, you will expect that individual to try and weasel out of the agreement by asking for a discount or not paying on time or whatever the covenants of the contract states that you two will engage in. If you know that ahead of time, you could set mile markers. And now we're talking about negotiations at this point. You could set mile markers per, well, I will receive X at this particular point in time, knowing that you want to make sure that you get as much as you possibly can as you go down a particular path with this individual in order to ward off his efforts to later talk about, well, I can't pay the invoice now, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Also, consider how you might use leverage in that particular situation. If you have something at one particular point in time that is needed more urgently for that particular attorney, you have leverage. Power is fluid. When you have power, and I term it as positional power at times, you need to use it to get what it is that you seek at that particular point in time. And thus, when you're dealing with an attorney that has aspirations of grandeur because in his own mind, for whatever reason, he wants to project that, make sure you use leverage number one at the appropriate time. Make sure you set mile markers number two, whereby you gain whatever you're seeking sooner than later. And don't position yourself such that you're at the end of the situation because now he has all the leverage. Okay, so now I'll pay the final invoice, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, Pat, in the speaking industry that you and I are both in, we as speakers know to get at least 50% of the investment clients pay to bring us in up front before we jump on a plane to go somewhere. And the final payment is due on the day that we present. We do that to lessen the degree of harm and or liability that we might otherwise incur. From a medical doctor's perspective, again, a medical nurse knows to what degree she has some sense of power. And again, you look for positions where you can be of extra assistance to the doctor. That extra assistance may not transfer into an immediate chit from a negotiation, but what it can be used for is to get even, get something that you want to return later on. Just know the circumstances that you're in, know how to use leverage, and know when you're dealing with a particular person of a particular nature or type, and put mile markers along that path that you engage with that person.
Yeah, I think those are great points. It sounds like what you're saying is that we have to be very aware of the behavior. We have to look at the preventative measures that we can put in place so that we can minimize the chance of being bullied. And often, particularly when a legal nurse consultant is working with a new client, there are no warnings until he or she picks up the phone and hears somebody screaming about an invoice. You're caught off guard. You're in the middle of doing something else. You immediately become concerned that somebody's unhappy. And nurses, in particular, have been trained to be pleasers. That's what we do in healthcare. We have this little button that you can push that says, oh, let me take care of you. Let me help you. And sometimes that's to our detriment because we can give away our power or become too flexible on our terms in an effort to satisfy somebody who's being unreasonable. That's a challenge when it comes to working with attorneys in particular.
And Pat, if you know that going in, you have the time to protect yourself and literally surround yourself with the level of protection needed by being able to ward off that action of that particular attorney later on. Knowing that this attorney has done this in the past, even if you suspect it, you put those mile markers in place such that, okay, so we're on schedule right now for per whatever is supposed to be delivered, correct? Yes, we are. And this portion of payment or whatever is going to occur at this particular point in time, correct? Yes, we are. And again, by putting these mile markers in place, you prevent that final call that comes in that says, oh, I'm so dissatisfied with this, that, and the other. It's like, no, you're not. And if you are, you've got to be joking me at this particular time because, my gosh, we have put mile markers along this path as we've gone through each step of this process. Now you're telling me that you're dissatisfied? And here's something else, Pat. Now, these are my words, and I don't suggest everybody else lives by it. Money is not the overarching theme by which I choose to engage with people. I choose to engage with people of good character. And again, I said, people will only do to you what you allow them to. Fool me once, shame on me. Fool me twice, it ain't gonna happen. Okay, and I know I deviated from the cliche, but I did so intentionally because you have to also determine to what degree you're going to give people a second chance. When we talk about bullies, bullies will tend to test someone first. And by that, what I mean is they'll probe just to see what the reaction might be from their target. If the target seems to wither somewhat, that bully is going to be emboldened to come right back at you again. So again, determine to whom you want to work with, why you want to work with that person. Set the ground rules up front, even with this an attorney, because as I said also, power is fluid. You have power to the degree you think you do. Someone else has power to the degree that you grant it to them.
That's a great reminder. We do have a choice when we run a business in terms of who we choose to work with. And also to keep in mind that when attorneys start burning through legal vendors, the word gets out because we talk to each other. And that's one of the common causes or the sources of conversation when exhibitors get together at a conference is who's not paying their bills. After a while, an attorney who has a reputation of being a bully and not paying bills will be putting the word out on the street about his or her behavior and makes it harder for that attorney to find willing people who will engage with the attorney to provide services because of that reputation of non-payment. So it is self-defeating behavior after a while, particularly when it persists and the patterns become evident over and over again.
That is absolutely true. And you can also, speaking of leverage, use a group source of like-minded individuals to have other individuals also get the message out. Like you just said a moment ago, at conferences, conventions, you know, talk gets around. You make sure that lawyer knows that his actions are being discussed and make it known how difficult it may be for him to get such services in the future. He'll straighten out. Believe me, he will.
How can our listeners find out more about you, Greg?
Oh, my goodness. Thank you for asking, Pat. First of all, they can reach me at area code 609-369-2100. They can also reach me via email at Greg, that's G-R-E-G, at the, T-H-E, master, M-A-S-T-E-R, negotiator, N-E-G-O-T-I-A-T-O-R.com, or go into the website at www.themasternegotiator.com.
And this has been Pat Iyer with Greg Williams talking about negotiating with bullies. Please be sure to listen in again next week. We'll have a new interview, offer a comment. Thank you, Greg, about Legal Nurse Podcast on iTunes. And if you would like the transcripts of our shows, you can sign up to receive those at no cost at podcast.legalnursebusiness.com. Thank you, Greg, for being part of the show.
Thank you very much, Pat, for all that you do. And for all your listeners, this lady is for real.
Remember the free training I told you about in the middle of the show, how to deal with toxic clients is waiting for you. Go to the show notes for this podcast, Legal Nurse Podcast 268 or 269 at podcast.legalnursebusiness.com and click on the button for the link to the training page.
And I've got a phenomenal resource for you just waiting on legalnursebusiness.com. My online training and books are designed to help LNCs discover ways to strengthen their skills and their businesses. Check them out at legalnursebusiness.com. Many of us are lifelong learners who enjoy the chance to keep expanding our knowledge, just like the Book of the Month Clubs, my membership site, lnceu.com, gives you 2 online trainings every month. We have a yearly payment plan that saves you over $50 compared to paying monthly, and each program is hugely discounted. Look at the options at lnceu.com. And my last website, thelncacademy.com, is the coaching program I offer to a select number of LNCs. You get my personal attention and mentorship so that you can excel and build a strong foundation for your LNC practice. Get all the details at lncacademy.com.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Check out Pat Iyer's resources for legal nurse consultants on legalnursebusiness.com. Pat coaches legal nurse consultants so they make more money, get more clients, and avoid expensive mistakes. Check out her coaching program at lncacademy.com. Please subscribe to our podcast and leave a review on iTunes. We always are interested in your ideas for new topics. Please leave a comment on legalnursepodcasts.com. Join our community and get notified of each new episode and receive the transcript of today's program. Complete the request form on legalnursepodcasts.com. We appreciate you and your interest.